All right. Joining us now is Boyd Haley from University of Kentucky. Hello, Boyd. How are you?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I want to make sure it's University of Kentucky, not Louisville, right?
It's the University of Kentucky. I'm retired. I retired this last July. Well, I'm a professor emeritus, so I'm still doing research.
What'd you retire for? I mean, usually when you retire, you die.
Well, I'm not. I'm just retiring from the university, but I'm still putting full time into my research.
Okay. Before we get into taking some phone calls and the like, how much is it, Mary? $9.35 an ounce.
Wow,
that's not bad. Do you have any gold, Boyd?
No.
What do you invest in?
Land.
Oh, all right. That's not a bad idea. And I guess in Kentucky, there's plenty of it.
Yes.
What do you know about the Jeremy Piven thing? Did you do any research on that? Was he scamming people, or do you think he was really sick?
You know, I really haven't looked at it. I mean, I don't really care about celebrities that much. I mean, I'd be surprised if that were that he had that much mercury exposure from what he was saying he did.
So you think he was just trying to bag the play because he didn't want to do it?
I don't have an opinion.
Oh, all right. Recently, court ruled that there's no link between vaccines and autism. And I don't believe that, only because I think lobbyists can exert a lot of different pressure when they have to and show their influence. What do you think the connection is between autism and vaccines? Do you think they're related?
Absolutely. And I would tell you, the caution is, it's that who can out-PR who? I mean, the public relations. There have been several cases where the same court have decided that the Marisol or the mercury or the vaccines did cause autism, and they just don't reach the press. Anytime they decide opposite for a specific case, you know, it's put all over the newspapers and announced and highlighted, and there's as many cases where they have said that the Marisol is causal as there are cases that say it's not. So it's just a matter of public relations ability. And, you know, the parents don't have the public relations ability that the vaccine industry and the Center for Disease Control has.
We're talking to Boyd Haley, researcher, a PhD, professor emeritus from University of Kentucky, who's probably more knowledgeable about mercury and the dangers of it than just about anybody else. The last time you were on, we got a zillion questions from people concerning mercury fillings and the like. Has some of that died down, or are people should they still be concerned if they have mercury fillings? Are they reversible? Should people go back after having mercury fillings years ago and get them taken out, or should you just leave them the way they are?
I don't think anyone should leave amalgam fillings in their mouth unless they're extremely old. And since the last time I talked to you, a group called Consumers Dental Choice, I'm their scientific advisor. We filed a lawsuit against the Food and Drug Administration because they have refused since 1976 to classify dental amalgams, you know, with regard to their safety. And that's because they can't be classified as safe. I mean, you can't have something that emits that much mercury be classified as safe. We went to court, and the court ruled in our favor. So this July, the Food and Drug Administration has to classify amalgams for the very first time. Every other mercury-containing device has been classified except dental amalgams. And the American Dental Association has fought this because they like using them. Their members, some of them, like using the amalgam fillings. But there is no doubt about their toxicity. I mean, I would debate them openly. And if there's anybody listening that's a dentist in your state that wants to debate me on this publicly, I'll be glad to show up and do that.
Now, you know what's interesting? I mean, I got a couple of different dentists. I go one for regular stuff, and then I have another one for periodontal work and another one for root canals and this, that, and the other thing. But my regular dentist, we argue about this all the time. And I mean, he's older, he's semi-retired, and comes from the old school of dentistry. Do you think that dentists get brainwashed when they're going to college, learning about certain things, and therefore do not want to do any additional studies later on in life because they think that whatever was relevant in 1960 is relevant today?
Well, dentists don't take any science. They don't take any toxicology. I mean, they're very good with the nerves in the face and how to do the dental procedures, but dentists aren't toxicologists. There isn't a dental school. Our own dental school here at UK is a very highly ranked dental school, and it is a very good dental school. but I don't think they have one device in the whole dental school that would allow them to measure mercury coming off of a dental amalgam. I know at one time they didn't, about 5 years ago, because I debated one of their dentists, and I asked them, what devices do you have to measure mercury coming off of an amalgam filling? And they had none. Whereas in the chemistry department, where we have people who, you know, specialize in toxicology, we have multiple devices to measure mercury coming off of any type of, you know, material. And we can measure it. And we did measure it. We had nine dentists across the United States make amalgam fillings of known weight and known surface area in plexiglass molds, took those fillings out of the mold, weighted, measured them right away. They're very, very high. I mean, the amount of mercury coming off a fresh amalgam filling is tremendously high. My machine, it would just blow my machine right out of the water. It was so high. So we waited 3 months until the surface mercury had evaporated off of these amalgam fillings, and then we measured them for 28 straight days to see how much mercury came off and was it steady level. And this is without abrasion, with the amalgam in a sealed container in 10 mLs of water that we dumped every day and rinsed it out and changed it every day, and then came back every Friday. We would measure the mercury coming off, and what we found is that the amount of mercury coming off of an amalgam filling depends, one, on the brand, two, the dentist that placed it, and three, you know, how much you abraded it. If we did not brush these amalgams, just let them sit quietly in the bottom of the tube, the amount of mercury that came off, depending upon which brand we were talking about, was, you know, somewhere like 166 to 600 times higher than what the ADA estimates. Now, that's a very simple, straightforward experiment that the American Dental Association, nor the FDA, nor any manufacturer has ever done and published. It's simple, easy to do, and you can't make a mistake on it. It's just simple. And so what it is that the American public have been misled by primarily the bureaucrats at the American Dental Association, stating that the amount of mercury that comes off is so low and such a small amount that it wouldn't hurt anyone. It's just not true.
We're talking to Professor Boyd Haley, who's, I hate to say this, but he's more popular than I am. He has people listening to this segment now on the Internet, over 5,000 people in Singapore, Germany, and Belgium. How'd you get so popular worldwide? I mean, do you realize how much publicity and clout that you have?
No, I don't. I mean, what you're saying surprising me. But I think what it is because I have enough nerve to stand up and say this in front, you know, even though it's very unpopular because we have government agencies that don't like what I'm saying. But the bottom line is there are just thousands and thousands of people that are affected by mercury toxicity because of our practices of medicine and dentistry, and they're ignored. And they, when they go and say this, even if you check their, you know, their mercury levels, the content of mercury in their blood, you can see they're toxic. I mean, for example, the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Academy of Sciences have put out publications saying that at least 10% of American women have such high mercury body burdens as to render susceptible to neurological damage any child they would give birth to. And yet we keep our heads stuck up where the sun don't shine. When we go to the FDA, et cetera, do something about it. If we have so many people, 10% of American women, that's a lot of people. In New York, it's over 25%.
If you have a question for Boyd Haley, you can buzz in at 525-WCCC. Now, I mean, autism wasn't even around years ago. What were they using in vaccinations before? What am I trying to say? Well, if we have so many cases of autism now based on mercury in some of these immunizations, was that metal involved years ago, or is it just something that went in recently?
Well, you know, before the 1940s, there weren't very many vaccinations. There were a few, but not very many. The bottom line is autism was recognized, first reported as a relatively common disease, where they had reported nine children in about 1939 to 1941. Thimerosal was invented and put into biological systems or vaccines in about 1933. So you look at the date, and then all of a sudden, when they looked at these children, it fit in that it started, you know, shortly after we put Thimerosal, the mercury-containing component, the preservative in vaccines, in 1933.
All right, hold the line. We got to take a little break, and then we'll come back and take some phone calls for you, okay? 8:43, Boyd Haley on the phone. Despite adamant denials by medical establishment figures and recent adverse court decisions, evidence still continues to mount that one of the at least three theories, the mercury-containing thimerosal additive, reactions to introduction of live viruses and overstimulation of the immune system may combine with genetic variations in some children to become key factors in the onset of the disease. When did this become, you know, kind of an epidemic? About when?
About it started going up very dramatically around 1990. And the mandated CDC vaccine program was instituted in about 1988. So we started seeing it going up. It fits into the issue. And you know, Sebastian, there's got to be logic behind all of this. You know, anyone like me making a statement that's very unpopular with the vast majority of the medical community. And if we look at this, they say it's safe. And why do they say this? And this goes back to the 2004 IOM committee. And what I would recommend that everybody do is go to safeminds.org and read the Freedom of Information Act regarding, you know, the basis of that committee and what the committee said behind closed doors. It indicates that there was a big push, a major effort by people in the Center for Disease Control to suppress the knowledge that thimerosal did cause the autism epidemic. And in the 2004 IOM, headed by Marie McCormick, they said that there were really well-designed studies. And what they're talking about were five epidemiological studies that they considered. The five that they did, not a one of them was done by an American university, not a one of them was led by an American, and four of the five were done in Europe on European cohorts who were not exposed to mercury at the rate, at the early date and the rate that Americans were. So it's like, you know, saying, well, I'm going to show that mosquitoes have nothing to do with malaria, and all I have to do is do the study in Alaska where they have a lot of mosquitoes but no malaria. So, that you know, it's totally disingenuous. The entire 2004 IOM meeting, you know, it, to me, is was based on a preconceived idea that we're going to show that vaccines are safe no matter what.
Now, is thimerosal removed from vaccines, or is it still present in some brands of several that are marketed domestically?
Well, you know, I don't have access to all that data. But what I can tell you, the AAP and the CDC say it's removed. However, if you go to a state like I have, Florida, your state, California, I mean, been to many of them, and you just want to pass a simple law that they cannot use thimerosal in vaccines in that state, those people will show up and fight you tooth and nail and do everything they can to keep it legal to use thimerosal in vaccines. Now, if you understand the economics of the issue, most of our medicine is ran by HMOs. Now, if you're an HMO person and you're going to go buy vaccines for your state or for your program, and someone says, well, here's two varieties we sell, one's much more expensive or a bit more expensive than the other, mm-hmm. but they're both legal and they're both good, they're both approved by the CDC and they're both approved by the AAP, which one do you think that HMO representative is going to buy?
Okay, let's take a call. Here is Greg from Manchester. Now, I know that people all over the world are listening to this segment. Are you Manchester, Connecticut or UK?
No, I'm Manchester, Connecticut.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your question for Boyd?
All right, I got, like, two questions. Will there be any justice of any kind from these corporations that have done this? And will this be considered an act of war and, for that matter, a crime against humanity?
What do you think about that, Boyd?
Well, you know, I'm not a legally based person. I think, you know, I thoroughly believe that there are certain people that we, I mean, proof exists that they did things that were, in my opinion, criminal. Anybody that covers up the toxicity of a device that's being injected into infants wholesale, I think it's criminal, but I'm not a lawyer.
Okay, here's Jesse from Southington. What's your question for Boyd?
I have an 18-month-old who's going to be getting the MMR vaccination soon, and I'm pretty sure that's the one that has the most possibility of autism.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been concerned about it a while since the first time you were talking about this on your show. I know that kids can't go to public schools if they don't get the vaccination, but if the vaccination causes autism, I don't know what to do about it.
That's a great question. I mean, what is what's a parent of a young child to do, Boyd?
Well, first of all, I want to clarify one thing. People, you know, do blame the MMR vaccine, and there's no doubt that Dr. Wakefield's data that there is measles virus in a lot of the autistic children. It's not in all of them. But they have to consider on the day that they got the MMR vaccine, if they were following the CDC mandated program, that day they also got three vaccines that contained thimerosal. There's no thimerosal or mercury in the MMR vaccine. So, I mean, keep that in mind. Number one, you know, number two, you know, I think the government is required or should be required to present safety data. When they say there's no proof that thimerosal does this, where's their data showing safety? We certainly have enough children injured. I'd like to know what the rate is. I'd like to see a study that says, quote, it's safe, and how they've come to that conclusion. And also, you don't have to get your child vaccinated. You have every state will have some sort of leeway, and the thing I would recommend is that you not vaccinate your child until they're at least 2 years old.
And, Jesse, I will tell you this from personal experience. When I was married years ago, my ex-wife was a big believer in this type of study long before it was popular mainstream. We took her two kids to a doctor who was homeopathic. He never gave his own children immunizations and was able to get them through school because he was a doctor and kind of faked his way through. The kids got to be 21 years old and never missed a day of school, never even had as much as a common cold. And it can't be just a coincidence.
Yeah, I remember that caller. I was really surprised by what he had said. I spoke to his pediatrician, and she assured me, you know, they're safe, and it's a lot of genetics involved, you know, hereditary. And, you know, the kids would be showing signs of something wrong before. And I remember another caller of yours before said she got her kid vaccinated at 18 months, and the kid didn't speak another for like 7 years or something.
Yep.
Right? Remember that?
I do. I remember that.
The kid changed right from that day, and that just scared the hell out of me. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, you're welcome. Let's go to Melissa. How are you, Melissa?
Hi.
What's your question for Boyd?
It actually has to do with fillings.
Okay.
My mom has had some trouble with her muscles and her tongue and her palate for over a year now, and she's had neurological exams and post-viral things and everything you can imagine. And the most recent prognosis is mercury poisoning. And I want to know if he's ever seen anything like this and if it's reversible, and if so, how long we can expect this to go on.
Okay. Boyd, what do you think?
Well, you know, please understand, I'm not a medical doctor. I don't treat patients. You know, and I have heard that. I have seen and know. I have heard, but I've heard, you know, a lot of stories that are related to mercury toxicity, and I have met a lot of parents, and I've gotten information back from, not parents, but adults, who have told me that when they had their amalgams removed and it took a period of time, that many of their neurological problems and their energy levels went up dramatically. That's not surprising. If you look at the level of mercury that the person who has amalgams may be swallowing, Dr. David Quigg from Doctors Data, they measure mercury in urine, blood, and samples that physicians send in, estimated and did a calculation and found that people with amalgam fillings on the average excrete 60 micrograms of mercury per day in their fecal material. That's a lot of mercury. If 60 micrograms is being excreted, you can count on the fact that there's a considerable amount being collected in the body, and it is a well-known toxin.
Now, is this thimerosal in any way connected with hepatitis or influenza, diphtheria, or any other diseases?
No, I don't think so. Not other than the fact that it's a very severe toxin to your body, so it's a toxic burden.
Okay.
But I don't think that it causes any of the illnesses you just mentioned.
All right, we'll come back with more phone calls. If the lines are busy, hang up and dial again. Boyd Haley from University of Kentucky, back on the radio in a minute. On The Rock, 106.9 WCCC.
Sebastian in the Morning.
WCCC-FM, WCCC-FM HD, Hartford. Hello, Singapore. Hello, Belgium. Hello, Manchester.
UK.
525-WCCC, if you want to talk with Boyd Haley, expert on autism, mercury, toxicity, vaccines, teeth problems. Let's go. Here's a letter I got, Boyd, from Marissa. I'll read this one to you. My mom has been having trouble talking for over a year. Main areas affected are tongue, soft palate. They don't move fast enough and seem to have no muscle mass. We've explored many options, including post-viral infections, vocal cord damage, and neurological disorders. She has had countless tests, including four EMGs, four MRIs, all of which came back with nothing. The most recent route we are taking is mercury poisoning. She actually goes today to have the last of her fillings removed. Her urine test for mercury came back very high, but according to the doctor, within normal range. Is it still possible that the mercury affected her speech? Have you seen this before? How long after the fillings removed should we essentially see results?
Well, the first thing is the doctor is making a big mistake. It's a mistake that most people in medicine make, in that the amount of mercury in your urine or in your blood is a reflection of how much you've been exposed. In fact, the opposite is true. If you're breathing mercury vapor, the thing that is critical is how much is retained by the body. And the more that's retained by the body, and that's based on the fact that these people may be under oxidative stress and don't have the molecule needed to bind to mercury to excrete it, that it will build up in your body. So, you know, the amount that's in your blood and your urine just tells you that you've been exposed, and it may be, you know, somewhat related to the concentration, but it doesn't tell how much you're retaining. And that's the key issue, because several years ago we published a paper on mercury in the birth hair of autistic children versus the birth hair of control children. And the mercury in the birth hair of control children was dramatically higher than that found in the autistic children, and it went up with increasing amalgam fillings in the birth mother, whereas with the autistic children, it stayed level. Now that, I mean, and at very, very low levels. And what this indicated is that the autistic children, you know, at birth, were unable to excrete mercury as well as the control children. This was backed up by, you know, three other labs have repeated this and confirmed it. Now, the other thing that confirmed it was that the mercury level in babies on a challenge test or autistic children was much higher than control children. That was done by Dr. Jeff Bradstreet. Dr. James Adams at Arizona State University did a study on looking at the mercury level in the baby teeth of autistic versus controlled children, and found it much higher in the autistic children.
Now, you mentioned vaccinations. Are they mandatory in school, or they're optional? Which is it?
Well, they try to tell you it's mandatory.
But it's not?
The bottom line is this is America. I mean, you can go in and tell somebody, don't do that to my child, and fight them and say, no, we're not going to do it. And if you listen to them tell you, they'll tell you it's mandatory, but it's absolutely not. In most cases, you can get, you know, a leeway. And mandatory, I mean, you know, I'm in favor of vaccines. I mean, I think people shouldn't get me wrong. I'm not against vaccines. I just think vaccines should not be put in infants who don't have, you know, enough bile to get rid of the toxins that are produced and injected with the vaccines, don't have the kidney function developed yet to respond to this type of insult, and many other factors. They're very young. Their brain is developing very rapidly, and any insult can have a dramatic effect.
Does every school immunize children at about the same age, or does it vary from state to state or even city to city?
You know, the AAP has a recommended vaccine program, and it's too early, in opinion many. For example, there's a law being considered, or a bill, in the state of Florida saying you can't vaccinate a child before they're 6 months of age. That's the first vaccination they can get instead of doing it on the day of birth. A lot of this law is based on a study done in Manitoba, Canada, where they looked at children that received the hepatitis B vaccine at 2 months of age versus 4 months of age. Those that got it at 2 months of age were 16% likely to have, roughly 16% likely to have asthma, whereas if they waited until they were 4 months of age, that cohort group was 5%. So you had a threefold drop in the asthma rate in people who waited from 2 to 4 months. Now, in the United States, we give that same shot on the day of birth. So there's and you notice that didn't make the news. You mm-hmm. notice that the AAP and the CDC didn't change their vaccine schedule because it affects the income of the doctors who treat infants. They want you coming in with that well baby visit and getting vaccinated early and get you on an early schedule. You know, and there's nothing about it that, in my mind, has been shown to be safe. And as a matter of fact, with all of the problems we have, with the CDC saying 1 in 6 children in the United States has a neurodevelopmental disorder, you have to say, where does that come from? And you look at it, well, they're children, so they had to have this happen somewhere between birth and 6 years of age or something like that. What happened to these kids that didn't happen in 1940? Well, vaccinations.
Hold on a second. Let's take a call. Here's Glenn. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, hi. Just wanted to ask Boyd if he ever heard any about any research as far as separating the MMR shots, if it's safer.
Boyd, did you hear his question?
Yes, I did. I don't know that anyone has done a study separating out the MMR shot from the other vaccines to see if it's safer. There's a real paucity of vaccine safety studies that should be done if the CDC is going to suggest that the program that they've developed has been proven safe. I don't think it's been proven safe at all. And they can argue, well, it's not been proven bad, but that's not really the point. You know, when you're doing something to infants, it should be absolutely proven to be safe. Not saying, well, we think it's safe and it'll be safe in our opinion until you prove it's not. Well, I think that Manitoba study showed that it's not.
Here's Jason from Sin City. Go ahead, Jason.
Yes, hi. My question is, I have a lot of fillings in some of my teeth, and I'm 34, and I just don't know if how I can tell that if there was mercury used. I just don't know how you can tell if there's any signs or anything.
If there's mercury in your fillings?
Yes.
Well, if they're quote silver fillings, if they're dark in color and not really white, they're probably silver fillings. They're 50% mercury, and there isn't a brand made that doesn't excrete what I would consider a toxic level of mercury.
If he has those, where does he go to get them removed or changed?
Well, there's a group called the International Academy of Oral and Medical Toxicology, and their website is www.iaomt.org. And they are a group of dentists and physicians who think mercury from dental amalgams is causing problems. They are very scientifically based. And if you go there, you can find a dentist, the closest dentist or a member that removes amalgam fillings and removes them safely. So your exposure to mercury on removal is kept at a very low level.
We're talking to Boyd Haley from University of Kentucky, professor emeritus, expert on mercury poisoning, autism vaccines and the like. And let's talk to Jamie. What's your question, Jamie?
Hi, how you doing? I appreciate you having him on because I know you're a hard ass and I know that you really don't believe in what he's saying. But I hope you keep an open mind because people've got a really good point.
You think that I don't believe in what he's saying?
I didn't think you swallowed it at first, but I...
Are you kidding? I mean, I've been in his corner since the first day I've talked to him.
Perfect, and I appreciate that, especially on 106 is perfect.
What is your question?
I have a 9-year-old nephew, and he's autistic, and they've been fighting tooth and nail. They have chelations. They constantly have things going through his blood to try to clean his blood out. And unfortunately now I have two 10-month-old twins, and I'm sick of being strong-armed, like he's saying, to tell me I need to give them shots. They need to get immunizations. Connecticut has, it's called Dr. Bob Sears, and they try to push this on people, and it's an alternative vaccine schedule. And on this alternative vaccine schedule, and I quote, it speaks about the flu vaccine. The flu vaccine should start between 6 and 12 months old near the flu season, then yearly after up to 5, and as the flu season approaches. And I quote, try to use only a mercury-free shot. If this is not available, do not get this year, or use a nasal spray.
Now, how many people actually read that stuff? I mean, Boyd, should people be aware of what's going? I mean, obviously, but do they pay attention?
I'm not sure, but, you know, I think this is a critical point. First of all, you know, the studies on the efficacy, how well the flu vaccine works on older people and on children, it has been a total failure. It's not effective. It does not prevent people from getting the flu, according to two scientific studies that I had nothing to do with. Why anybody would want to inject or recommend giving a baby 6 months old a flu shot with the Marisol is beyond me. I mean, especially since it's been shown that it is not effective. Now, I can see you don't want a baby to getting the flu, and I think there are a lot of things you can do to prevent that. And I don't think giving them a flu vaccine is one of them, according to the scientific literature and the reports. I mean, you never see a report on how effective these flu vaccines are until it's old. And the bottom line is, if you do read their literature, the flu vaccine usually is a failure.
525 WCCC, if you have a question for Boyd Haley, we have a few more minutes. What about sushi? How dangerous is it from a toxicity standpoint? People eat it all the time. I mean, do you get mercury poisoning from a lot of different fish? What are the concentration levels? How much is dangerous, and what should we not worry about?
Well, you know, sushi, eating raw fish is, you know, very dependent on what fish you eat. Everybody will tell you that the larger predatory fish have a higher level of mercury. But I would say of all the mercury exposures that we have, the exposure we get from eating fish is probably the least damaging. And the reason for that is very simple. For the fish to survive, it has to tie that mercury up with protective compounds in its own body. And so you'll see with some of the fish that do that, that they have a lot of selenium. And if mercury binds to selenium, making mercury selenide, it's totally biologically unavailable to be toxic. So most of the mercury in fish goes straight through your body. It's not toxic, and it's not very damaging at all compared to mercury vapor. Now, I don't recommend you eat fish with a lot of mercury in them. I mean,
such as what? Swordfish?
It's not nearly as bad as people like to blame it. I mean, the Dental Association, I say we are exposed to more mercury in a tuna sandwich. Yes, but most of that mercury in that tuna sandwich is tied up with protective compounds that make the mercury non-toxic and excretable by your body.
What about high fructose corn syrup, soda, ketchup, things of that nature?
I would avoid that like a plague. I think that is one of the disasters of the FDA in recent years. They should have shut those places down a long time ago.
So I mean so is the average can of soda very dangerous in your opinion?
Well, yeah, but not just for mercury. I just think soda's with sugar and everything else. But no, what they found for the people who are listening, that it was just about half of the factories that produce high fructose corn syrup produce it with mercury in it, and that is something that can be shut down. I mean, that's something you can stop. You can test your factory to see if you're using products that are producing corn syrup with high mercury content.
We're going to take a break. Hold the line. We'll be right back, okay? All right, back with Boyd Haley. Boyd, how much do you get stonewalled by, the media or different organizations that think that your ideas are, kooky, to say the least?
Well, the reporters that come and talk to me within about 10 minutes, I show them enough science that they develop a good deal of respect for what I'm saying. They will write a good article and take it to their editor, and by the time it gets published, there's nothing in there that presents the facts that I bring up. For example, I can't tell you how many people, editors and people I've talked to about a very specific issue. We have the most highly vaccinated infants in the world, and yet we're number 41 on the infant mortality list. That means 40 countries have children, infants, that live longer and at a higher rate than we do in the United States.
That's amazing. I had no idea that was
why isn't the public and the editors and the journalists, why don't they get excited about that and go find out what's causing that problem?
So this, when autism and the vaccines and all these things are connected and people go to court to talk about this and they rule in favor of the American Medical Association, this is all a matter of economics and nothing more than that? I mean, if people look at the research and the studies, how come there aren't more doctors, jumping up and down on your side of this thing?
The only doctors that I run into that really come up and agree with me, there are some, but basically they're doctors who have autistic children of their own. Then they will look. Most medical doctors, and this is an accusation that I'd like for them to try and defend, they get their knowledge based on what I call the high priest theory of knowledge. They don't read any papers. They don't discuss these papers like the four epidemiological studies that are just, they're like Bobby Kennedy said, they're poor fraud. Even a person who's not a scientist can look at these studies and tell that they were manufactured. But they believe what the CDC says, and they say, we know vaccines are safe because the CDC tells us so, and the CDC is the one who instituted this disaster, and the CDC has never funded a study by an American university to look at the vaccine issue. They fund studies. The last one they did was in Italy. They funded that one, and that was a where they looked at the children who took 67 micrograms of mercury a day versus 137 micrograms in the first 6 months. And they said, we didn't see any difference. Well, that's like saying we're going to have, see if whiskey makes you drunk, and we're going to have these kids drink one bottle, and over here we're going to have them drink two bottles and see if there's any difference. No, they're all drunk, so therefore the alcohol didn't do it because the increase didn't increase the effort. I mean, it's an absolutely scientifically invalid study when you don't go back to people who have no exposure.
Here is Greg from Manchester. Greg, you got a question for Boyd.
Thanks, Sebastian, for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I thought I was doing good by delaying my kids' vaccinations by 6 months, but now it sounds like it should be closer to a year. But my question is, after the vaccination, how long does it take for symptoms of autism to creep up? You guys are getting me nervous, so I got to ask the question.
Okay. Well, what's your answer, Boyd?
Well, you know, from listening to parents, and I've listened to thousands of them, many times before you leave the waiting room where you got the vaccine, the child will be screaming and have a fever and, you know, and be unpleasant and not respond normally, you know, after that date.
Okay, here's Leonard from Adam. Go ahead, Leonard. What's your question for Boyd?
Hey, how are you, Sebastian?
Good, thank you.
My mother had Alzheimer's for the longest time, you know, and it went on and on and on. And I read a study or something. I don't know where I found this out. I don't remember. But everyone that was, this is kind of off the subject, but everyone that had Alzheimer's had a high level of aluminum in their system. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, that was a study done by a Dr. Perlman, I think was his name, many years ago, and it hasn't held up.
So no connection?
Pardon?
No connection?
No, none that has held up. And then the studies that I personally did from my laboratory, we found three biochemical abnormalities in Alzheimer's disease brain versus normal brain. And when we tried to, we did a study of aluminum and all the other heavy metals to see which metals might mimic or, you know, cause the same biochemical abnormalities when added to normal brain tissue or exposed to rats, we found that mercury, and only mercury would do that, and mercury was very perfect at it. It causes the mercury, and only mercury, if you add it to neurons in culture or to give it to rats, will cause the formation of neurofibrillary tangles, which is the diagnostic hallmark for Alzheimer's disease.
Now, you we talked about sushi before. So you say the average person eating sushi on a regular basis has no danger, because last night my insignificant other and I were at a Japanese restaurant and she ate plenty of sushi, and I didn't really say anything because she does have a lot of life insurance, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Do you make any connection between the two, or is sushi,
well,
okay?
If you were, you'd see a really high rate of mercury toxicity in Japan, and you don't. And I'm saying, no, any exposure to mercury that you can avoid should be avoided. But fish has a lot of very positive values, food values that we need. And no one has shown that eating fish or sushi has caused an increase in Alzheimer's disease.
Okay. Bill, what's your question for Boyd?
Yeah, good morning, Sebastian. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
The question I have is, how long ago did they stop using amalgam fillings? And does he suggest maybe going to have a blood test to see what you have for a mercury level in your body? I'm 57, and I know I've got them in my mouth because I remember as a kid seeing the thing written down what they did, and they always said amalgam,
sure.
And I've never had any taken out. I'd just like to get his opinion on that.
Go ahead, Boyd.
Well, first of all, I'd say probably 40 to 50% of the fillings placed in the United States today are amalgam fillings. They've been outlawed in the Scandinavian countries for the most part, but most of the world still uses the mercury-containing fillings. The only thing I would say, if you want to check, you can go, and there's a thing called a mercury challenge test, a DMP challenge test, and that's where they take a urinary sample before you take this chelator. You take the chelator, and then you save your urine for 6 hours, and you see how much your mercury level goes up, and it will put you on a scale. It doesn't tell you how much you actually have in your body, but it will put you on a scale, that they've developed of how toxic you might be and how much of a mercury body burden you may have.
Is it only mercury that we need to worry about? Is that the only metal that's dangerous to the average human being?
No. As a matter of fact, lead, cadmium, arsenic, and many, several heavy metals. And it's good you brought that up, because there was a study done in 1974 where they determined the toxicity of lead, cadmium, and mercury. And then they did a study where they did a combination. And what they found is that if you mixed a level of mercury that killed one rat of 100 with a diluted level of lead that killed one rat of 100. If you use those two together, lead plus mercury together, that you killed 100% of the rats. So it's called synergistic toxicity, and the presence of lead dramatically enhances the toxicity of a specific level of mercury.
One of my listeners, Dana, had some problems a couple of years ago with regular surgery in the mouth, and she could not find any experts to testify in her behalf when she wanted to go and sue a dentist because she got cancer from something that was connected with a dentist's nickel pin. Why are there so few people that are experts in the field and can vouch for people that have had bad problems with dentists?
Well, if they have the experience I had when I started publishing papers saying mercury would mimic or exacerbate the conditions that you see in Alzheimer's disease, as I went from being an extremely successful person at getting NIH grants to being a person that couldn't get one no matter what I did.
So you can get ostracized very quickly if you are taking a stand against the general public.
Yes, and most of the people, you'll see them, they will look at, I mean, consider the fact we have a population that probably, of those in the baby boomer stage, probably 80% of them have mercury fillings inches in their mouth, inches from their brain, and go look at the studies funded by NIH and see what they will fund, and you will see reports where they talk about every metal in the world being possible of causing a neurological or an illness, and yet you won't see mercury being studied.
Here's Aaron from Waterbury. How are you, honey?
I'm great. I have more of a statement than a question.
Okay.
I have a 9-year-old son with autism, and I could have written a book before Jenny McCarthy because we've done everything she's done, if not more, from chelation to sensory tables, everything. We travel back and forth to New York weekly. We see a dance doctor there, and I have a 1.5-year-old that I will not immunize until she's 3. I am so not against immunizing, but I'm a firm believer in waiting. You do not have to immunize your children for school. You can get a religious exemption form. My son has not been immunized since the day he was diagnosed at the age of 2. The other thing I wanted to express to people is they're not realizing that this not only has a burden on the family emotionally, financially, and socially. We have lost friends. People don't want to deal with it. It's a huge change in life.
I appreciate the phone call.
I want to say that, that lady is what I hear time and time again. And when people say, why do you waste your time? Why do you spend all this effort? It's just ladies like that. I see that. And it's unfortunate that, the people in the medical community couldn't see probably the look in her eyes when she was making that statement. You see the hurt. You see the damage. And, it should anger everyone. And what really irritates me is that we have a Congress and state legislators that won't listen to it. They listen more to the lobbyists that write a check for their reelection than they do to the damage that's been done to the American children. And I thank that lady for making that statement.
What about, if once a child develops this, what are the solutions? I mean, is there anything retroactive that can cure this? What is the person that has an autistic child, what do they do?
Well, there are physicians out there who attack the fact that they're probably mercury toxic, and they do the best they can with the tools they have to decrease the mercury toxicity in these children. And if they catch them young enough, they can almost get them out of diagnosis, or they can get them out of diagnosis many times. The problem is the government, on one hand, the CDC, et cetera, is fighting the fact that this is caused by the early vaccines, and most likely the major culprit is the thimerosal or mercury toxicity. If you have that stand by the government, then you don't have anyone at NIH or at the major medical centers working on better procedures to detox these children. There's no doubt autistic children are toxic. Dr. Jill James did a study on the glutathione levels in autistic children versus control children, and she saw that it was about half. And glutathione levels is a measure of you being under oxidative stress. Mercury is one thing that's known to reduce glutathione levels. And so we know that these children are sick. They're under oxidative stress. Most of us are pretty damn certain that it's caused primarily by mercury exposure at the age before 2. And yet, you can't get our government, our NIH, to even address the best way to treat these children other than to give them advanced biological therapy, which I'm not against. But
right, let's,
it's not
going
to cure them. It's not going to detox their bodies.
Let's go to Vernon. You're on with Larry King. Mm-hmm. How do you pronounce your first name?
Siona.
Siona. Go ahead, Siona. What's your question for Boyd?
Hi. You believe it or not, I'm pushing 49, and I'm getting my very first silver filling in a couple weeks. How much risk is there to, you know, at my age, having one filling like that?
Well, why do you have to get silver if it hasn't happened yet?
Well, I just got the cavity, and they made me the appointment in a couple weeks.
And they told you in advance that they were going to fill it with silver?
Yeah.
Void?
Yeah, the silver filling.
Well, I want to point out to her that mercury that gets into the body of a healthy younger person, middle age, etc., is carried out after it forms a complex with a compound called glutathione. And at 49, you may make enough glutathione to bind and keep that mercury from causing you to have any problems.
But is it unusual for a dentist even today to be using that kind of stuff? I thought it was rare.
No, it's not. I mean, they like making that presentation, but like I said, about half the fillings that are placed in people today are amalgam fillings.
Now,
I want to make one point.
Go ahead.
The real danger of people having amalgam fillings, you can go through your life and you're doing well because your body has, you know, good energy production, you're doing well, and your glutathione levels, the compound that binds and protects you from mercury toxicity, are high. When you start hitting 50s and 60s and 70s, the level of that compound drops off. It's much lower in elderly people, and then they lose the ability to excrete that mercury. Then the mercury can start causing problems as they age.
Does the average dentist give you an option? If she goes in there in 2 weeks and says, I don't want it done this way, can you give me a different substance? Will they do that?
If they wouldn't, I would change dentists immediately. I wouldn't go to this person.
Well, there's plenty of options, Siona, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Let's go to, Glenn?
Yes.
Go ahead, Glenn. What's your question?
Hey, Sebastian. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My wife and I, we're actually expecting our first baby next month. And I guess one of the very first vaccines she's going to get while in the hospital is for Hep B. So my first question is, does that vaccine actually contain mercury? Should I be worried about that? I mean, do I have a choice? If it does contain it, do I actually have a choice of a different vaccine? And then secondly, obviously, you know, being a newborn and everything, she's going to have to go to a bunch of doctor's visits. What do I need to be asking the doctor?
That's good.
Know,
good questions, Boyd. How do you address those?
Well, you know, hepatitis B. How does a baby get hepatitis B? I mean, how does anyone? You get it by having sex with an infected person or using a dirty drug needle in this country. That is, those are the two primary causes. By the time your baby is 14, she'll need another series of hepatitis B shot. Hepatitis B on the day of birth is a, you know, in my opinion, something that is incredibly stupid to do. You're putting the child at risk for a disease that the child is not even close to being, you know, likely to get. It's nothing more than giving the vaccine manufacturer a captive customer list. Hepatitis B on the day of birth is the dumbest thing I think that the vaccine industry does.
All right, we got time for one more. Is it Nicole? Nicola, how do you pronounce it?
Hi, it's Nicola.
Oh, Nicola. Oh, go ahead.
Hi. So my question is about, I heard what you said about mercury and fish, but my question is about eating fish and sushi while I'm pregnant, because they, like, everyone's been scaring me off about the mercury level in fish while I'm pregnant and how it can cause autism in the baby. I don't know.
Okay, Boyd, is she safe to eat it when she's pregnant?
Well, you know, I mean, I would make it a minor part, and you know, be intelligent about it. You need to eat fish. It supplies you with a lot of the compounds you need for developing a healthy baby. And there are fish that do not have mercury in them. I mean, they're very, very low in mercury. So, I mean, don't go out and eat swordfish and whale and stuff like that. But there are, wild salmon is relatively low. A lot of the freshwater fishes, some of them are low. And I think you should just, you know, talk to people who know more about nutrition and measure this than I do. And if you're pregnant, just eat fish that's very, very low in mercury.
Okay. It's always great having you on the program. I know you don't take phone calls, you know, privately, but if anybody needs to send you anything, is there a website where people can see your opinions or anything?
Well, you know, we started a website, and it's called CTI Science, CTISCIENCE.com.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Boyd. Always great having you on the program. We'll talk to you in about 6 months, okay?
Okay.
All right. Take care. Boyd Haley?